Welcome to The Great People Show, your guide to greatness, your GPS to excellence. Here's your host, J.J. White.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to The Great People Show. I'm your host, J.J. White, and it's getting a little crowded in The Great People Studio. First and foremost, always and everyways, is my co-host, Mr. James Muncy. Good morning, James.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing great. I feel great, man.
Yeah.
I feel great. I've never felt better in my entire life.
Hey, it's like summer weather. As we record this, it's going to be
80s.
Like near 90s later this week.
80s.
Kids think school is almost over.
They
summer
thought that
plans are happening. So, man, it's a great time of year.
Everything's turning. We're turning. Nature's turning. And we're hoping that our listeners are turning a new page. That's the whole reason we're here. Thank you all for being a part of our show, listening to us. We come to you every 2 weeks or so now to bring inspiration into your life. And I heard something this week that I've got to share. It struck to my heart. It's one of the best quotes I think I've ever heard. Greatness is given by proxy.
Wow. Now, who said that?
Scott Galloway.
Oh.
Do you know Scott?
I don't.
Well, not that I know Scott, but do you know of Scott?
I don't know of Scott.
You really need to listen to Scott's podcast. He doesn't care about really anything. He doesn't care what people think about him. Mm. And he's an NYU professor, and he's got great podcasts. He's kind of a futurist. He reads tea leaves on what's going on in the world and things like that. And he just said it on his podcast. I was like, wow. We've been in the studio for years now. Mm-hmm. And we say often, James, we say very often that you can't just decide to be great and then just self-inflect yourself and just expect all these things to happen to you and for you and then be showered with greatness on your own, right?
Right.
We do things from a discipline perspective to become better. But I've had people say, I want to come on your show. I want to come on your show. Like, they want to come on the show. When I ask them why they want to be in this, I think I'm a pretty good person.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we don't.
That's not what it's about.
That's not what it's about.
At all.
It's not what it's about. I mean, greatness is given to you by the people around you because they see something in you that is admirable.
Right.
And it has to be given because you didn't go out and actively seek it from them.
Exactly. And if you're lucky in life, you have some traits within you that may be considered great.
Yes.
And you know, again, and I feel like we say this a couple times a year. People ask me sometimes, well, you know, The Great People Show. So what, are you and JJ
exactly the
great people? No, that's not it at all.
We broke the mold.
It's all about our journey to be really great people. And I love the fact that here in our new season, we are bringing more people into the studio who have great qualities within them. And I think, you know, after maybe 10 or 20 years of this, we will have enough of those traits in the studio that we will have maybe created one truly great person.
And selfishly, I do that so that I can, through osmosis, just get some of those great qualities to rub off on me.
Oh, I always feel a little better when I leave here.
And so sometimes it's people that I know in my life that I want to bring into the studio. Same with you. You know people in your life that you want to bring into the studio. And every once in a while, I have someone that comes to me that doesn't want to necessarily be on the show, but says, you know, I have someone that I think you should bring on the show, which is why we have a third person in the studio today.
We do?
Oh, you didn't notice?
No. Oh, how's it going?
Oh, it's Scott. Scott Sizemore. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah,
I really appreciate it.
So Scott and I have a mutual friend, Ed, that I've known for many years through my Dale Carnegie business. And he said, you know, I just know a guy. I'm going to introduce you to this guy. I think he would, because Scott, I don't know if you consider yourself to be a great person. The answer is hopefully not, because if you consider yourself to be too much of a great person, then it may be more inflective than reflective, if you know what I mean. So
absolutely.
So Scott, welcome to the show. Give us a 1 minute bio on Scott Sizemore.
All right, let's see if I can make this under 1 minute. So grew up in Chesapeake, Virginia. Went to Virginia Commonwealth University. Got drafted by the Detroit Tigers. Played 11 years professionally. Played in the major leagues with the Tigers, A's, and Yankees. Had a bunch of injuries. Yeah. Those injuries did lead me to have one record, which I don't necessarily want to have.
We'll talk about that.
But now I have a wife. I have three kids. We live in Hanover, Virginia. I, you know, coach, I train kids in baseball and girls in softball, and I'm getting my real estate career off the ground. So I'm trying to kind of transform myself and grow in a different area and industry. And no, I don't absolutely think I'm too great. I'm actually in awe of stuff like this and the things that people can do and how creative people are. And just how there's just so many different ways to build and grow as a person.
I think that is such a key to success, is to be able to look at so many people around us and admire their gifts, what they do, how they do things, and just start to at least think, man, I think I need to do something different to get a little bit better at that. Now, there's a fine line between doing that and literally coveting what other people have and coveting who other people are and try to be something you're not. But I would presume, it sounds like from your story, that at some point in your life you kind of wanted to be a baseball player. I mean, is this something that you go back as far as you can't remember kind of deal? Or when did it kick in that you're like, you know, I'm good enough at this. Maybe I'm great enough at this to make a couple bucks at it along the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a dream of mine as a little boy, but I honestly, I never really had any aspirations of playing professionally, or I guess I didn't think it was an attainable goal. And there was a pretty...
Now, if I could stop you, why not?
I just didn't think I was good enough. You know, I thought that, you know, the country's so big.
Who told you that?
Nobody, really.
I just wanted to clarify that. So nobody come up to you and said, Scott, I just want you to know, in case you're ever wondering about being a professional baseball player, you're never going to be good enough. So don't even think about it in case you are. That didn't happen to
no,
you.
No, no, did not.
You did it to yourself.
Exactly.
Okay, all right. I just want to clarify that.
So it was just one of those things. You know, I got a little bit better. I grew finally. I was a small kid. You know, I kind of, as I train, I try to inspire some of my students. Mm-hmm. I always tell them, you know, when I got my driver's license at 16 years old, it still says I'm 5'4", and I was 130 pounds. And I was, you know, driving at 16. And that's very, you know, undersized. I still played varsity baseball that year. I still managed to make some all-district accolades. And I, you know, I finally matured, but I was a late bloomer. And fortunately, baseball is one of those things where it's not raw athleticism that allows you to be a great baseball player. You know, a lot of it's just determination, grit, and skill. You know, it's definitely a skill game, kind of like golf. But yeah, I just kept plugging away, and I saw people around me and kids that I grew up with that made it to the major leagues, and it was like, wow, I mean, these guys aren't just to the major leagues. They're dominating. These guys are all-stars.
Who was it? Who were you growing up with that you were
watching? David Wright, Ryan Zimmerman, Mark Reynolds, the Upton brothers. Justin Jones was another guy that got drafted in the second round. That was a teammate of mine.
So these were people that you knew personally,
oh, yeah.
knew of. What impact did having a personal relationship with highly successful people do to give you confidence?
It just made it attainable. Yeah. Again, those guys did have some physical tools that I didn't have, but when like I started comparing myself, or I guess looking at, you know, what they brought to the table as a ball player, and there was obviously some character stuff that was very important. I mean, there's a lot of that goes into it as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just made kind of the light bulb go off in my head that, wow, I think I can do this. And there was obviously some success that had to come along the way that made it seem attainable. But I think there was just a lot of luck involved, good timing, being in it, the right place at the right time, and obviously hard work, right? What do they say? Preparation and opportunity usually create success or something to that gist. But yeah, it was really cool to kind of see my buddies go and do their thing, and it was an absolute inspiration.
How old were you when you got into the majors?
25.
Okay. And Where was the lowest point for you? Like, when I say lowest point in that journey, this is before getting to the majors, by the way, where you literally said, you know what, this is too hard, or this isn't for me, or it's not worth it, or where you basically, your mind starts to talk yourself out of it. Where was that low point for you?
I would say it was in low A, which was in 2007. It was the Midwest League, and, you know, there's basically five steps from when you get into pro ball to when you make it to the majors. And low A is usually your first full season, you know, 142 games, you know, which is, it's a grind. Minor leagues, I think the schedule is tougher than the major league schedule, even though you play more games in the major leagues. But low A, I came out of the gate really bad. I mean, I started off terrible, which the year before I was really good. Like, you know, so it was kind of the polar opposites of, I had in my mind, I was on this track, and it just, I got stuck in the mud, man. I couldn't get out of it. And I really didn't break loose until after the All-Star break. And it was kind of one of those tricks, I guess, that my hitting coach told me. He was like, all right, look, after the All-Star break, it's literally a new season. You're not going to think about your old numbers. We're only going to look at your performance on the second half of the year, you know, as an organization, as a coaching staff. And I guess I went like 2-for-4 or 3-for-4 that first day, and I got a couple hits the next day. And the next thing you know, I was rolling. I think I ended up hitting like 430.
At this point, was it just all mental?
I think so. Like, I was healthy. You know, I think there was a couple things mechanically that I did need to change, but nothing drastic. Like I said, I basically took my same swing from the previous year, which I hit really well, into that year. But, yeah, hitting is so hard, and it is so mental, and confidence is such a big part of it. But like I said, I think luckily when he presented me with that scenario, I had some good games, and I mm-hmm. instantly kind of got that confidence back to, like, okay, like, they're not thinking of me as a bum, you know what yeah. I mean? They want me to succeed.
Did you think you were a bum?
Oh, absolutely. You know, that first half, you know, like I said, she was just my girlfriend at the time, but my wife, I was like, oh, man, what am I going to do? Like, are we still going to be good if I'm not still playing?
So and you're already thinking about your exit strategy.
Oh,
at this
yeah,
point.
Absolutely.
That didn't help the confidence knowing that you're looking at your way out.
No, not at all. And again, like I said, and it's a cutthroat business. You know, yeah. like there's guys that, you know, they get signed and 2 weeks later they're gone. You know what I mean? And it's every night you're being evaluated on whether you can play and be a part of the organization. And obviously there's a hierarchy with prospects and draft and the money that they invest in you and how many chances you get. So that's another part of the system that's kind of fair and unfair, I guess, if you look at it. But, yeah, thankfully I came out of it and ended up having a really good second half. Played in the Arizona Fall League, which is, you know, kind of the best minor league prospects from usually AA and AAA. But I got to go there out of low A, and I ended up hitting second in the league against the best players in the minor leagues. So that was kind of the moment when I went to that Fall League and realized, like, man, I'm not only good, like I'm better than a lot of these guys that are in the entire minor league system.
You had momentum.
And, yeah, it was pretty eye-opening. And from that point on, I think I got better each year. And, you know, I did have some injuries that slowed me down. But
In minors?
Yeah.
Or in – okay.
Yeah, minor leagues. So
so you get to the – so what was the moment like when you found out you were going to the major leagues? Oh, you're laughing now. There's a story here.
There's a story. So it was funny. So, you know, I got hurt going into the 2010 season. The Tigers basically said, you know, you're our guy. You're going to be our starting second baseman. You know, and I'd never played before.
Starting second baseman.
And it's rare. It's rare for a guy to just kind of be handed a starting position out of spring training. And the Tigers at the time were a big market team. You could put them right up there with the Yankees as far as dollars spent, the players they're bringing in. And again, it's just more rare. And I guess it was – you know, extremely gratifying to be like, wow, I'm not just like, you know, getting a cup of coffee.
I'm not a bum anymore.
They're kind of handing me the keys to the castle.
I'm pretty sure I'm not a bum.
So anyways, it was funny. I guess we played a game. It was a TV game, and it was late in spring training. And like I said, I had a really good idea that I was going to make the team, but I had broken my ankle in the Arizona Fall League the fall before. Okay. I had surgery, and I had the screws taken out of my ankle on January 28th or 29th. And then spring training started 2 weeks later. So I still have holes in my bones.
Holy crap.
And I'm trying to perform and break into the majors and compete. And, you know, I'm not just making it up. I would get through active stretch, and I was limping the rest of the day. You know, through the rest of infield, through the rest of games. I could, you know, I was at 80% at best. But they told me.
How did you plow through that? Like, what was going through your head?
They're giving me, I'm going to be a major leaguer if I can stay on the field.
So you literally. It was survival at this point.
Yeah,
you weren't giving up at this point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But it was funny. So my agent called me after that spring training game, that TV game, and he said, "Congratulations, man!" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "You made the big league squad." And I was like, "Really? News to me." And I was like, "How do you know that?" He's like, "Oh, well, you know, Jim Leland said that on TV today that the starting lineup today was going to be the opening day starting lineup." So I was like. Oh, wow. What a way to find out that I made the team. Like, you know, I was just.
Not only, you didn't even find out on TV. Someone else found out on TV.
Yeah, exactly. So it was kind of like, I don't want to say I was upset, but it was kind of upsetting to not have a conversation and say, hey, congratulations, kid. Like, you know, you made it. But, I mean, I guess it kind of happened eventually, but it wasn't, I guess, as big of a deal as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So today. You're not a Major League Baseball player, Scott.
No, sir.
And you didn't retire as a Major League Baseball player. You didn't give your full career to the Major League. Something happened.
Yep.
What happened?
So I guess the biggest hurdle that I had was I had two ACL tears in back-to-back years, 2012, 2013. In 2012, I was the starting third baseman for the A's in a really good spot. I think I had really found my niche and my confidence in the Major Leagues. Tore my ACL the first day of practice, spring training. Then the next year, I missed the entire year. Next year, managed to make the A's again, but more of as a utility guy, play some second, play some third. And then the eighth game of the season, I tore my ACL again in Anaheim. And both medial and lateral meniscus tears with them, which isn't as serious, but it's just another, like, you know, cherry on top of the injury pie, I guess. Just missed that entire year as well. Came back in 2014. I didn't get a major league contract. I kind of got non-tendered by the A's. That's what it's called when you have the opportunity to get a major league contract. You're in arbitration, but you know they didn't want to take the risk and give me that guaranteed money. So I signed as a free agent with the Yankees, minor league free agent, and ended up starting in the minor leagues, but got called up, made it to the majors for a few weeks up and down that year, but. I mentioned the record that I have in major leagues, and this isn't verified. I've never really looked it up, but one of the reporters for the New York Times, when I first got called up, he said, "Hey, I did some research, and
you're getting called up to the Yankees,
getting called up for the New York Yankees." And yeah. This was Jeter's last year, so it was cool, and I didn't grow up loving the Yankees by any means, but putting on the pinstripes nonetheless is still really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the reporter says, "Hey, man, you have a major league record." I was like, "Huh?" And he goes, "You're the only guy that's torn his ACL back-to-back years and then played in the major leagues the next year." I was like, "All right, cool. Not a record I want, but I guess I got something going for me when it comes to it." And I think that's one of those things where I the reason probably why I'm on the show, I really wanted to persevere. I felt like I had so much left in the tank. I just didn't want to go out.
So when you say left in the tank, is that in your heart? That's in your head? Because it doesn't sound like you had physically – everything you needed in the tank.
Yeah, I mean, it was both. Yeah, and like I said, when I got hurt when I was with the A's, I just knew I had a chance to be a really good player. Like I wasn't going to be a Hall of Famer, I didn't know if I was going to be an All-Star, but I knew I could be a consistent everyday player in the major leagues. Maybe play for 8-10 years, whatever mm-hmm. it might be, and mm-hmm. that ends up being a pretty good living when
sure.
it comes down to it.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see if I could get back to that place. I wanted to see if I could compete with the best in the world, even though I might not be quite physically the same that I was. I got pretty close physically. There was definitely some things that I was lacking in, but not that I couldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
But like we talked about earlier, baseball is so mental, and as soon as my body started to fall apart a little bit, the confidence.
You started thinking about it more more. It started to pitch a tent in your head, then all of a sudden it started to rent a house, and all of a sudden yep. you bought the condo, and then it had lots of acres that it owned inside you, didn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. No question.
Yeah, it's often a dream. I don't know about you, Jay. Did you grow up playing baseball?
No.
Yeah,
no.
I did a little bit. I have a similar story. When I was
when you got to the minors.
Let me tell you. I mean, it's more of like a truncated story that happened 10 years
uh-huh.
prior in my youth, and my major league career ended whenever I got hit in the face with a fastball at the age of like 11 and deviated my septum and. I just felt like I had to retire at that point. I mean, it was probably there was nothing left in my tank for baseball whenever you get hit with a fast pitch at that age.
It's not fun.
And it's not fun. So it was kind of a dream. Like, I played soccer a little bit, but baseball, my dad wanted me to be a big baseball player. Mm-hmm. So, and I think it's a big dream of kids to grow up to be a major league something if you play sports. Did you play sports growing up?
No, I really didn't. I was more into business.
As
dorky, dorky as that sounds.
And if you know James, you wouldn't be one bit surprised.
I was hustling at age 10. But but no, I grew up a huge baseball fan.
Okay.
I grew up, my dad's company had front row box seats right on the third baseline at Shea Stadium.
Oh.
And so, and this was in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up going to, about 20 Mets home games a year, and I felt like
wow.
I could reach out and shake Howard Johnson's hand. I mean, he was right there. And this is Daryl Strawberry and Doc
yeah.
Gooden and
yeah.
a lot of what was in the 86 Mets, and so I grew up a huge fan of baseball, but not a player.
Yeah. And even as a fan, even if you're not playing, I think it's a dream / fantasy for little boys to want to be a major league baseball player like that. And very few people get to fulfill that dream like you did. Did you always see it as a dream that you don't deserve, I don't deserve to be here. This is something I was thinking about when I was 8 years old, and now here I am.
Yeah, in a sense, for sure. And there was definitely some, starstruck moments.
Yeah.
Like, the couple that stand out to me was my first Major League spring training, Ivan Pudge Rodriguez, mm-hmm. Hall of Fame catcher. I'm taking throws down from him at second base, you know, tagging guys out. I'm just like, man, I had baseball cards.
Surreal.
You know? And then the other one was
After that, you go get him to sign the card.
That's one thing I didn't take advantage of as much as I should have. You know,
I'm kicking
myself, not being a fan of a lot of the guys that I played with. And the other big one was my rookie year in Seattle. I got to play against Ken Griffey Jr., who I literally had posters on my wall. You know, he was one of my top two favorite players of all time. And I'm sitting here playing defense against him. I'm just like, dude, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe I'm on the field with this guy right now.
So we all have dreams, right? We all have aspirations. I turned 47 today, right?
Happy birthday.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I did that just to get some, I just value signal to you guys so you could tell me that back. That's the only reason I brought that up. But even I still have dreams. Obviously, the dreams of being a professional baseball player are out the window. I did actually have dreams of being an NFL player, even though I never even played football as a child. So that's how far-fetched some of my dreams were. But I think everyone listening to the show right now, everyone has a dream. We still have dreams. And mm-hmm. it's such a hard thing to balance because you talk yourself out of it 99.9% of the time for all the reasons that you kind of talked about.
Yep.
I don't know if this is – if we don't have enough success at something – we start to believe that we don't deserve it or that we shouldn't be here or it was a stupid dream to begin with or and then you start to reflect poorly upon yourself saying, how stupid was I to believe that I could ever do this? And I don't know if you ever went through that where you started to actually blame yourself for some of your own shortcomings or, when you fall off the pedestal of the dream that you've set for yourself and – which, to a certain extent is okay. It gets ugly when you start blaming other people around you. And you don't seem like the kind of guy that would do that, but I'm just kind of curious if you ever found yourself in the moment where you started to maybe just blame other people for some of your misfortune. Because it sounds like it's kind of cutthroat. Like you're waiting on all these people at every level all the time to decide your fate.
Right.
And we do that to ourselves, Scott. We do that to ourselves in life where we put our future in the hands of other people. And then when it doesn't turn out our way, we blame them whenever it was our decision really to begin with to even be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the only time, not the only time, but one of the times that sticks out to me where, I don't blame other people. I try to look inward as much as I can in all aspects of my life, sometimes not always successfully. Usually in marriage, but
welcome to that club.
Anyway, so I guess that rookie year that I talked about when I was coming off that ankle surgery, I think everyone could clearly see that I wasn't 100%, so I did feel like, looking back, I wish I would have just spoken up and just said, hey, I'm not ready. Like, I need to get healthy. I need to get strong again. But that carrot, was just dangling right there in my face.
What you wanted. Mm-hmm.
My lifelong dream was right there. And I just, I couldn't turn it down, and I don't think many guys would.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish there would have been somebody that would have stepped in and be like, hey, you're still our guy, but we want to see and make sure that you're 100% before we put you out on the field. Because, again, it didn't happen, and I got back there plenty of times after it. But a lot of guys, if they get to the big leagues and they don't have success and they get sent back down, they never recover from that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're done. And I had those thoughts. Trust me, the first time I got sent down, I was crushed. I mean, my girlfriend, now wife, she had to pep talk me a bunch that first week. And luckily, my dad surprised me and came and visited me when we were on the road in Syracuse. So that support system was really important for me. I leaned on those people that had seen me play, seen me produce, seen me be a really successful player. And, after just a couple days of throwing the pity party for myself, I realized I still got a shot. I can still grind my way through it, even though I might not be 100%. It was a rewarding year in the big picture because I did persevere through a lot, and I think I became mentally stronger because of it.
What do you think that has done for you today? How many years has it been since you've been in the major leagues?
My last year professionally was 2016, but 2014 was my last year in the major leagues.
And so that was 7 years.
Yeah.
So it's been 7 years, and you went and started your own baseball camp. You mentioned.
Yeah.
So obviously that translated for you, but here you are now starting a real estate career. You're a father, you're a husband. You don't mind me asking, how old are you now?
36.
36. So you're not even at halftime yet. How do you think this perseverance has helped you to where you are today and where you want to go?
I mean, I guess first and foremost to understand that the doubts are natural. You're always going to have some negative self-talk, but like just being able to kind of like push your way through it, and just know that I'm fairly calculated in what I try and what do I attempt, and I guess because maybe some of it could be a slight lack of confidence, but I just know what I can do if I continue to push and drive and just do the small things, and that's what baseball is all about. Like trust the process. Go about your business in the small term, and it will lead to something big term. And I think it translates really well to real estate because almost everyone understands that first year is kind of miserable. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot of business to be had. Everyone's just going to, I think, make sure that you're going to stick with it and you're going to continue to work at it. And it's hard. It's patience.
You just said something that I can't get out of my head. You said, I know what I can do.
Right.
And I look at James over here. James, you're one of the most driven guys that I've ever met. And I'm wondering how much of what you do is based on what you know you can do, or how much of it is based on, I don't know if I can even do this, but we're going for it. Like, how – because James has a huge background in risk, with business and everything. Like, how much do you really risk whenever you make a lot of the big decisions that you make?
Oh, risk everything. I mean, risks are every day, right? I mean, a great example in our own business right now is, you've read in the news recently about the semiconductor shortage.
Oh, yeah.
That's limiting the cars and everything. So last week, we bet it all on black, and it's a very calculated risk, but we took stock of a lot of the electronic devices that we move, and we literally cornered the market in the United States, and we spent millions upon millions of dollars.
Wow.
I hate that we're in this situation, but we're counting on the fact that this chip shortage is going to run through at least the summer, which I think that it will. And if so, this will pay off in droves for us. If not, it's not the end of the world. It just means it'll be a slower sell through of these. But I think that what we just did, I mean, basically all of our competitors woke up last Thursday morning to find out that none of the devices that they need are available anymore, and that they probably be able to get them until September.
Sounds like an Apple play.
Apple
just takes over all inventory of everything they need, and
it's cutthroat, right? But so much of it, and hearing this about baseball is actually it's reaffirming a lot of my thoughts on things. I've always been a very strong believer that self-limiting beliefs are the biggest thing that keeps us from getting to where we might otherwise be able to go. And I'm guilty. I am somebody who would think, if I was a kid playing baseball, I'm an odds guy, right? I'm always an odds guy. And I would look at like Major League Baseball and I would say, okay, let me see. There are probably hundreds of thousands of kids in middle school and high school that want to do this. And then that goes down to however many, but still an obscene amount in college. And then of all the people that are in the minor leagues, look at the percentage of them that ever get an at-bat, in the majors. And I think I would be the guy that would say, and I think that's why I didn't have those dreams, because even at a young age, I was kind of like, gosh, screw that. I want to go do something where I'm not going to spend, invest 20 years of my life into something that the odds are significantly stacked against me ever getting there. And I'm not proud to say that. That's the reality of like who I was. And I always felt in business that there's a lot more opportunities, a much more level playing field where I wasn't counting on other people. I could count on myself. Mm-hmm. To make it. And that's based on so little knowledge of how baseball or major league sports works. So, when I hear somebody like Scott come in here and talk about that journey, and, it's awesome to hear. And it also like makes me really pause again at how much self-limiting beliefs, I would write off what Scott did in 2 seconds, and I'm a pretty confident person. And so it's really cool, and I don't know what your thoughts on that are, Scott, because I mean I don't know how you go in to the career that you were in and not be consumed with just those percentages, man. Percentages are, JJ knows, percentages are everything to me, and like
Yeah, and I would say, man, that's probably one of my biggest things is I'm not much of a risk taker, and that it's that self-doubt that we just mentioned, and I'm trying to fight through that, absolutely. But with baseball, it was just something I loved, know what I mean? Like, I was willing to sacrifice, well, I guess it wasn't a sacrifice because, you're young, you're not tied down in any way, at least when you first get into it. So it's just, you're chasing the dream, and it's an awesome dream. And if you get there, it's pretty rewarding for a bunch of different reasons. So I never really worried about the odds so much. I understood that it was a long shot, and I never really, I never made it to the point where I was making millions and millions of dollars. But I didn't really like subscribe to like the major league lifestyle of like blowing through your money, living like a king, all that stuff. I was pretty conservative in a lot of different ways. I consider myself a man of faith, and a lot of that kind of kept me grounded. I guess the odds weren't a huge factor for me, just because, like I said, it was just something I loved. I knew it wasn't going to be a forever career for me. Mm-hmm. It was just if I can make it, awesome. You know, I obtained my dream. But if not, I'll try to take the life lessons that I learned from baseball and try to apply it in some other way. And I guess I kind of got in the middle ground where, I got some comfort and some flexibility with what I can do with my life, but certainly not enough to sit back and do whatever I want. And that's kind of the point where I'm at now, just personally, with wife, family, kids, all of it, and then trying to find that balance of, how do I enter this new career? How do I, make sure I'm covering my bases at home and being there for my kids? Because ultimately, that's one of the big reasons why I didn't try to stick it out in the minor leagues longer to see if I could get back to the big leagues. I was just missing so much time of my young kids' life.
You had kids when you were a major leaguer?
Minor. I was in the Yankees when my daughter had just been born.
Okay.
And then my second son, I have three kids, but my first son was born, and I recognized the complete difference, because the first year Layla was around, I was hurt. I was at home. I was doing my rehab at the A's spring training facility, and we lived in Arizona at the time. And then the following year, Luke was born, and I was kind of grinding away in the minor leagues. And just the stark difference between my relationship with my daughter and, the affection that my son kind of showed me, I was like, man, I'm missing out on way too much. And, of course, there's dynamics that come into the marriage and all that stuff. And, obviously professional baseball players, if you look at the statistics, and I don't know if it's still true, but I know when I got out, something like 80 to 85% of Major League Baseball players end up in divorce.
It's probably two issues. It's time away from the relationship.
Right.
And then it's the things that many men will do when they're out of the relationship.
Yep, absolutely.
Talk about odds. The odds are stacked against that relationship.
Yes.
Yep.
Not very unrelated, but a related note. I'm kind of a pro wrestling buff. And apparently A&E inked a deal with WWE because I just binge watched A&E over the weekend with all these WWE shows that they have that they just put out there. And they were talking about the lifestyles that they live, being on the road, and how difficult it is to maintain family relationships whenever you're traveling all the time.
Yep. Yeah, so like I said, that was kind of the big thing. Being there for my kids is the utmost importance. And I know there's a balance, but yeah, I just don't want to miss out on any of that time, because you can't get it back.
I can't get this out of my head. It feels like there's these three categories everything fits into. It's the things that I know I can do, and there's confidence there. There's the things that I think I could do. This could work, but it may not work, and it's worth taking a shot to see if it's working. And then there's the things that you have in your head, I can't do that. And I think where most people get caught up is everything that is typically in that middle category, they put into the third category.
Mm-hmm.
Like if it's not a guarantee slam dunk, this is absolutely going to work, then it easily slips into that it won't work.
Right.
And I don't know. It's just interesting to watch the world today. I mean, we've been talking a lot about the relevance, what's going on and how so many things are changing right now.
Yep.
You see Bitcoin going crazy, even though it's probably one of the riskiest places you could put your money.
Yeah, I mean, well, look what happened with Dogecoin the other week.
Is it Dogecoin or Dogecoin?
Doge.
All right, Dogecoin.
I don't know. I've heard so many different variants.
But that was a fun ride.
Did it go down?
What's that?
Did it go down?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's not crazy, but it peaked out in whatever was the mid to upper 40s cents.
Well, I bring that up because I'm watching people take, well, mainly their government checks, but nevertheless, it's their money.
Yeah.
I've always felt that was just a refund of my taxes that I gave unnecessarily. But anyway, putting it into things like that and then taking that kind of risk. But when it comes to their relationships, when it comes to their careers, when it comes to being the business owner rather than the employee, people freak out. They just can't get over the risk side of it.
Yeah, well, people that's why people love to gamble. I mean, you know, you give somebody money. I mean, again, I used the reference a few minutes ago. They're gonna go and bet it on black and see what they can do. And you know, with I don't know, with these stimulus checks, I don't necessarily blame them. I mean, you know, the government is the government is basically borrowing $13,000 from you, giving you $1,200 back, and telling you to be grateful. maybe I want to try to get a return on that $13,000. I don't know.
But still, I mean, it's more than that. It's just it's a little frustrating for me because I guess I've been there. I've gambled that. I own two businesses now, maybe a third by the end of the year. They're all gambles. It's money, it's time, it's heart, it's energy. What's the worst that could happen? And then you add, like in your career, Scott, you added a wife, then you added kids. Then you started to see your physical limitations, and you seem like a really reasonable guy, that you weren't going crazy. You weren't sticking it out because it was always the dream and you just had to keep the dream alive. It just changed for you. But most people never even get – most of the people listening to this show – I don't know if you remember Corey, who called into the show a couple years ago, the florist.
Yeah.
You remember Corey?
Yeah.
Like, she works at a grocery store – worked. I haven't kept up with her. She was a florist at a grocery store, and she called into the show. This is when we were on live radio, and she was very confused about her pathway. And I think I may have even said, well, what's your dream? She goes, I want to own my floral shop. Well, what's holding you back? And she literally couldn't give an answer.
Yeah.
But we know what was holding her back. She was holding herself back.
Yeah. And you know, life is risky. You know, business is risky. Sports is risky. You know, no matter what path you choose, there's risk to darn near any of it, you know, and owning a business, is it risky? Sure it is. But hey, my business could something could change and my company could become insolvent tomorrow. But also, if I was working for a large corporation, I could be laid off, you know,
in
a heartbeat. You know, the real estate market is great, and hopefully that's awesome. We all know what can happen to the real estate market. There's nothing that you can name, except maybe some civil servant type jobs, that are truly a sure thing or anywhere close to it. So, you know, if I'm going to work for a large corporation and roll the dice that's going to work out for me, why can't I start my own business? Mm-hmm. You know, why can't I roll that dice instead? To me, it's the same thing. And I believe that if you have the right successful mindset and you are a hustler and you are somebody that is going to do whatever it takes, the words that I said to my wife when we dove into our first business when we were in our very early 20s, you know, I looked at her one night because we were kind of talking about, you know, worst case scenarios. And I'll never forget. I said, you know, I can't promise you that we'll never be broke, but we will never be poor. Yep. And there is a huge difference between the two. And, you know, so risk is all relative. And the biggest thing that I think any of us risks in all of this, and man, even especially listening to Scott's story, is we risk regret. And, you know, regret is a huge risk. And we all know that we can't get time back. Mm-hmm. Time is the most valuable commodity of all. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let's not spend our time doing things in life that we're going to look back on and regret.
Yeah. And what are you going to regret? Going for that dream, going for it. I mean going for it, all on black, right? Going for it. And then it failing and burning like in a ball of fire in front of you, or being 70, 80 years old thinking, you know, I wonder what it would have been like if I would have given that thing a shot. I wonder. And we're just talking about getting started here. That's all this part of the conversation is about, is getting started. How many hours could we spend talking about, okay, once you get started, what are you going to do when you get injured? What are you going to do whenever the business gets injured? What are you going to do whenever the customer falls apart? What are you going to do whenever the economy crashes right in front of your eyes? There's a lot of people that are listening to this right now. Their dreams completely crashed because of COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, I've definitely had my problems because of COVID. Some people are having good problems. Some people are having bad problems. But they're expected. Like that's par for the course. What are you going to do? What are you going to do in life if you just sit around and wait for every door to open up for you?
Oh, they're not. Nothing. I mean, you have to make your own luck. I mean, you absolutely do. And again, you know, Scott's story is proof of that. You know, I'm not going to be able to sit at home and think I want to be a major league, you know, baseball player, yeah. and expect that that the Yankees are going to call me tomorrow. You know, that ain't going to happen. I've got to make my own luck. And it's true in anything that you do. It's true if you're in professional sports. It's true if you're in business. It's true if you're just going to work as an employee for a corporation, mm-hmm. but you want to climb that ladder.
Yeah.
It's true no matter what. You know, your success is going to be a direct result of the work that you put in and as a result of you being able to think big enough to accomplish those goals. And, you know, we could do a whole nother show about this, and we're coming up on time, but I look at the Elon Musks of the world or the Steve Jobs or the Bill Gates and, you know, or any number of major celebrities, actors, professional sports players, et cetera. And if you hear them interviewed about, you know, how they got where they were, you know, one of the things that you will hear almost every single time is that they were able to think on such a grand scale mm-hmm. that it's difficult for most of us to comprehend. You know, I mean, Steve Jobs was no computer expert. Elon Musk is no, you know, he's not a rocket scientist, yeah. you know. But what both of those people, just to pick two examples, had in common is just their ability to think on just the grandest of yeah. scales that most of us are not capable of.
No.
And then, you know, so that there I go with a self-limiting belief. But you know, but they were just able to think on this grand scale and then execute on it.
Yeah. And to get out of the details, I think that's where we get tripped up a lot of times. We get tripped up on the little things like, well, you know, then that probably won't work. And then that won't work. And to your point, they're thinking about, well, we'll figure out a way past all those things. And I'm in a lot of different teams. I'm around a lot of different people all the time. And I'd say at least three quarters of the group get stuck on all the little things that'll keep you from achieving your vision rather than realizing we have everything that we need to overcome that. And as we wrap this show up, Scott, I'm curious, just some like parting words from you. We always like to end the show with specific advice, encouragement, things to our listeners, because we've talked about having a dream, chasing a dream, overcoming the resiliency along the way to that dream. And we didn't really talk about this, but when do you even know that you've achieved the dream? Does it even matter? Like, just to be able to live something to the absolute fullest extent is sometimes a dream come true. So what would you say to our audience, especially those that are really kind of trying to figure out themselves or in their own way?
That's a tough one, because like I said, I'm probably in that party as well. You know, I'm trying to grow, and you know, the cool thing about doing the real estate thing is that it's been a lot of work with no reward, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, thus far. So I'm kind of developing that entrepreneur's mindset, where I think for a very long time, and despite baseball, it was kind of, I expected things to just kind of happen, you know. So I'm trying to read as much as I can. I'm trying to educate myself as much as I can to try to gain that confidence through knowledge and, mm-hmm. and maybe, you know, get rid of the Chicken Little, I guess.
The chatterbox.
Says the sky is falling and nothing's going to work. Yep. You know, you don't have experience in this. And like I said, I don't know if that's great advice, but just keep plugging away. You know, the more you educate yourself, the more people you meet, the more activity that you do, there's going to be more activity that comes your way. And I think that's what's been kind
of
like—
Stay in motion.
It's kind of been mind-blowing to me, like just making calls and reaching out to people, the opportunities that have presented themselves, just like what got me on this show. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like just one connection or two connections away, and next thing you know, you could come across the person that will change your life.
Yeah.
But that doesn't happen unless you make that phone call, unless you write that email. And I'm just going to continue to plug away. And I do think that the pipeline is getting filled, but I'm a long way from
yeah.
being anywhere close to where I want to be. I hope that my plan will work, and I think it will.
Well, you've been there already. It wasn't with real estate,
right?
But you did this with a baseball career. You know exactly what right. that path looks like and how long yeah. it takes and the obstacles that come up along the way and
right.
how to push through those obstacles.
Yeah, absolutely.
James, what are you thinking, man? What's your parting words for us today?
No, I think I think that when you believe that you can't do something, I think that all you have to do is look at any infinite number of stories. I think if you look at most of those rock stars, movie stars, sports celebrities, and you look at somebody like Scott, and you absolutely can do it. And I know, you know, I'm starting to sound like a motivational, you know, cassette tape, but you know, I figured something like out of the 80s where, you know,
ladies and gentlemen, we have a special edition of the Great People Show. We will be distributing this on an 8-track and a cassette tape, maybe even a 33 vinyl.
But I think that as soon as you start letting those doubts fulfill your mind and you start letting that live in your head rent-free, mm-hmm. you will create a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you think you can't, you absolutely can't. If you think you can and you want to put the work behind it to back it up, you'd be surprised what you can accomplish. Mm-hmm. And I've seen that in my own career. I've seen it in several other people who I've gotten close to. So believe in yourself. I mean, a lot of those cliche expressions are cliche for a reason.
You know, I think of this whole idea of chasing a dream, and we haven't talked about this part of it at all in today's show, but what if your dream actually has very little to do with you and everything to do with the people around you? What if your job is to accomplish this major goal in your life so that it can unlock success for other people? Maybe it is to start that business, but it's not necessarily just for you. It's to feed 40 families. And I think that's where we get really lost in our dreams, and we get really inflective and say, well, I can't do that, or I don't have the money, or the odds are stacked against me, and I can't do this, and what if this, and what if that is... I'd say it's probably because your dream isn't big enough, because you've limited it to just yourself. I mean, we talked about self-limiting beliefs. What about a self-limiting dream? Right. What about a self-limiting vision where it's just too much about you? And if you would just open that dream up to what you can create for other people, then it actually makes it much more motivational. It makes it much more, I think, it helps you overcome the resilience. It helps you overcome the obstacles. And so many things in our life, we feel like we need to do it ourselves. That most of the dreams, most of the great things that ever has been accomplished by anybody, it's not because of themselves. It's because of so many other people around them. You look at the most successful people in the history of our world, it's not because they did it themselves. It's because they knew how to pick the right people and get them around them to help them achieve that dream, because it was their dream too. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was about getting that in other people. So that would be my advice for all of our listeners today is, first of all, I think you need to get a dream. I think some people don't sit down and even articulate what they want out of their life. And then you start to realize, okay, so how can I get this, and how can I include other people so that their goals can be accomplished too? They can get what they need and want out of life. Guys, thanks for being here this show. Scott, we appreciate you coming into the studio. We're going to do some batting practice out here after the show in the backyard and
dropping
over the fence. We don't have a fence, but you know, wherever the ball lands, that's exactly where it'll be. It's like right over the trees. If you can get over those, well, you probably could. You're a Yankee, so I'm sure you probably throw it over those trees. I'm sure.
Ah, man, I throw a lot of BP. I don't know if I got quite the snap in the arm.
I can't get a golf ball over those trees. That's because it keeps going to the right a little bit. So, James, thanks again for being back in the studio.
I'm always here.
We never leave. We sit here. We wait for someone else to show up.
I'll be right here for the next 2 weeks.
The best compliment, if you enjoyed what you heard, if you're going to implement it, if you received any kind of value whatsoever here, we don't do ads. The only thing we ask for you is just share and like everything that we do on social media. Tell the world about the Great People Show and help make it be an inspiration for other people. And we'll see you on the next show.
See ya.
See ya.
Thanks for having me on.